The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, Special Edition, for the weekend of December 23rd, 2005.
There will be a magic show at 09:30.
I don't know about a magic show. I don't know if that would work as a podcast. Believe it or not, I'm going to keep this introduction short. No email, no comments from the blog. That will be saved for show number 5. This is the Christmas edition of the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, and I present to you an interview with Hugo and Nebula winner Robert J. Sawyer. Now, if you're not familiar with the works of Robert J. Sawyer, I recommend that you get familiar with them because Rob is a well-accomplished, well-written author, and he's just a good guy to boot. I mean, you're going to find that he's a lot of fun in this interview. He took some time out of his busy schedule at Astronomicon 2005 to talk to me about how authors market themselves. Not just new authors, but established authors like Rob. He's a Hugo winner. He's a Nebula winner. And he is marketing himself just as hard as he was when The Golden Fleece, his first novel, came out. Some of his other titles to look up, you have Flash Forward, Factoring Humanity, Calculating God, and his recent release, Mind Scan. Rob has a lot to offer in this genre, and on The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, he has a lot to offer from the front lines. So without any further build-up, here's your Christmas present, a podcast with Rob Sawyer. Welcome to the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. I'm coming at you live from Rochester, New York, fashionable Rochester, New York, at Astronomicon 2005. My name is T. Morris, and I am here with your Christmas present, folks. It is Hugo winning, Nebula winning, and all-around great guy, Robert J. Sawyer. Rob, thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure, T. Thanks.
Now, Rob, how long have you been writing?
My first short story sold in 1979, and my first novel came out in 1990. So it's been a good long time now, and since, a dozen years now, it's all I've done to make a living is write science fiction, and it's been a good living for me.
Now, you said you started with short stories. Is there any way you can really market short stories when they're not appearing in something like an anthology or a collection?
You know, it's really hard, and you also have to think about, you got to be honest about the return on investment. You can spend a fortune and a lot of energy trying to market a short story for which, if it's in a magazine, you don't get any money for each copy sold. And if it's in an anthology, your share of the money might be, 2 cents a copy. Now, you stop and think about that. You're going to twist somebody's arm for 10 or 15 minutes to try and get them to buy an anthology that's got your short story in it so that ultimately somewhere down the road, when the royalties are accounted, somebody's going to send 2 cents your way. You have to have a certain sense of the value of doing this. I tend to think that the only thing worth marketing as a writer, that you really go out there and you hustle your novels. Because the novels, every sale counts. You get all of the royalties that are to be had on that novel. And it's crucial to your career. When somebody asks what your credentials are, you might say, I was published in this anthology. But you'll be able to say to a publisher or to your next publisher, but my novel sold X number of copies. And that's the figure that they want to know.
So what was your first novel?
My first novel was a book called Golden Fleece. It was a science fiction mystery crossover. It came out in 1990 from Warner Books. And it was not a big success. But nonetheless, I still have a career, and I'll tell you why. A friend of mine named John E. Stith was a writer for Ace Science Fiction at the time. And he said, they're not going to do anything to promote a first novel. I've been down that road before. There's no money in the budget for promoting a first novel, and nobody cares if a first novel succeeds or fails.
Now, wait a second. I got to interrupt you on this because this is something that you hear a lot with authors giving advice to people who want to get published. You want to make sure that you go with a big press because they're going to always be behind you and they're always going to promote your work, whereas independent presses, smaller presses, they're not going to do that. But you're telling me that you were given advice from another author that the big press, Warner, which is a big press, isn't going to be there for you.
Oh, you know, that's right. They're there in all the ways that cost zero money. They're there for you. But look at it this way. A novelist, a good solid mid-career novelist is going to make, let's say, $40,000 to $50,000 advances on a science fiction novel. A first novel advances might be $4,000 to $5,000, okay? That means for what it costs to buy one novel from a writer you've heard of, they can buy 10 from a writer you haven't. And that's what they do. They'll go buy 10 of them, a dozen of them, and just throw them in the marketplace and just see what sticks. Put no money behind them and let the market, survival of the fittest, it's Darwinian, let the marketplace sort it out. Of these 10 variations on the theme of science fiction or fantasy, throw 10 of them out in the marketplace, one or two of them will find homes. People will start buying them and word of mouth will get going. And the others, well, thank you for playing, is what the publisher will say. We tried you. You didn't take off. What did you do to promote me? Nothing. We didn't. We didn't have to, because from our point of view, we can do 10 novels and with no promotion, and one or two of them will take off anyways without it costing us a cent beyond that. So you get very little promotion, even from a big press, for a first novel. Now, my friend, John E. Stith, said to me, said, take that advance you get for your first novel. For me, it was $3,500 in 1990. He said, you should spend it all on one thing. He says, don't pocket it. Don't take your wife out to dinner. Don't put it away for retirement. Don't blow it in Vegas. Spend every penny of it promoting your book yourself. Right? You know, $3,500, okay, that's not life-changing money. It's not like, oh, I can quit my day job. It's not like I can buy a place in the country. It's not like I can take a cruise around the world. What are you going to do with that? Invest it in your own future. And he said one of the things to do, make your own bound galleys for your novel. These are the advance reader copies of books, and publishers do them for major books. They'll do up copies of the book in advance of the major print run and send them all to the review outlets. For my book, Warner wasn't going to do any. They were going to wait till the book was out, and once the book is out, a lot of places won't bother to review it. In the trade publications for the publishing industry, things like Publishers Weekly, Library Journal, Booklist, Kirkus. For most people in the world, those are just names you occasionally see quoted on a dust jacket. For people in the publishing industry, they're important trade journals, but they review books in advance of publication. It means they have to get a copy in advance of publication. If your publisher doesn't produce any copies in advance of publication, you don't get reviewed there. So John said, go make your own bound galleys. I did. Can't remember off, it cost me about $500, I think, to make 75 of these things. And even cheaper today with print-on-demand technology. This was 1990. And I sent them to all those places, plus all the standard science fiction places, Analog, Asimov's, Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. And because mine was an SF mystery crossover, to things like Mystery Scene and Mystery News, which are magazines for mystery readers. What happened was that the reviews are what made my career. Orson Scott Card loved my book, Golden Fleece. He was the science fiction reviewer for the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction at that time, 1990. He said it was the best novel of the year. Not the best first novel, best science fiction novel of 1990. This guy wrote it. By that point, I'd already been dumped by Warner Books. They'd already dumped me. I'd had my kick at the can. The book had gone out. Like I said, they throw it out there along with others that year, see which one sticks. Warner did this. They did two books a month back then at their line, the A title and the B title. And the B title got no support. The A title got the support because it was from a known author. B title gets no support. So they'd thrown out a dozen of them at that year. And then at the end of the year, they look and say, okay, who did well? Well, not Sawyer. Don't need him anymore. Sorry, thanks for playing, Rob. That was actually the call I got, December 24th, day before Christmas. My agent calls up and says, well, you're out of the game. But the reviews, then when the year-end review came out in February of 1991, Orson Scott Card's year-end reviews, and the best science fiction novel of the year was by this guy, Rob Sawyer. That was because I'd sent him a bound galley, or I wouldn't have been reviewed. And the review is what saved my career. If there hadn't been that review from Orson Scott Card, it would have been over at that point. Because how do you go to another publisher? They'll say, well, have you been published before? You say, yeah, Warner published me. Why aren't they doing your second book? Oh, well, they cut me loose because my sales sucked. You might as well say that you've got crabs, you know? Nobody wants to sleep with you when you show up with that pedigree. So you're out on the street if you don't have a good excuse. They said, well, yeah, no, the book didn't sell, but look at these reviews. And they said, oh, best of the year? Oh, all right. That's how I got picked up by Ace. John's advice, and I, as I say, I spent $500 doing these galleys. That left me $3,000. I went around to conventions all over the place doing readings from this book, getting to know people. I tell you, one of the things people always try to do with their first novel is get people to buy it. I thought, that's an approach. Another approach is I bought actually 100 copies of the book from my publisher. Now, okay, book back then, it was $4.95, mass market paperback. I could get them for, I think, $3 a copy. So I spent $300, about 300 copies. And I would go to conventions and I would give talks. And at the end of the talks, I would fling them into the audience. Commercial, mass market, paperback books. And I said, just give this a try. If you like it, tell somebody that you liked it. That was really effective. I have people to this day who said they bought every book I've ever written since then because they tried the book. They tried the book. The worst thing you can do as a writer is try to twist every arm you see into buying your book, because the hardest lesson to learn at the beginning of your career is that not every book, including your own book, is to everybody's taste. Every author thinks at the outset that they've written the book that everybody's going to love. What you have to learn is, no, your job is not to be loved by everybody, because you can't be. There's no book that is, not even Harry Potter. Your job is to be the favorite author of a narrow segment of the reading public. And that reading, that part of the reading public will love you to death. And they'll tell everybody in that same segment how great you are. But if you are, as I am, a hard science fiction writer, and I go and twist the arm of somebody who only likes epic fantasy, say, buy my book, okay. You get your first paperback book out, you're getting 6% royalties on the book, it's a $5 book, you're pocketing 30 cents. The other guy, though, is out, he's out $4.70. His investment is way bigger than yours at that point, right? He spent $4.70 to give you 30 cents. You're saying, oh my God, okay. What if he doesn't like the book? He's going to tell everybody, I didn't like this book. Guy talked me into buying it, and here's the thing. Most people don't know the difference between I didn't like it and it wasn't to my taste. Could be the best hard SF novel ever. But if you don't like hard SF, I can hand you Gregory Benford David Brin, two of the best guys in the hard SF industry. If you don't like those guys, that kind of writing, if you only like Tolkien and Terry Brooks, no matter how good I give you the examples, you're not going to like those books. And you're going to go around and say it wasn't any good, when what you mean is it wasn't to my taste. The American Booksellers Association did a survey a few years ago and hired the Gallup organization to do it for them. Why do people buy a book when they go into the bookstore? Number one reason, author name. They know the author. You don't have that when you're a first-time writer. Number two reason is a recommendation from a trusted source, which in 90% of the cases is a friend.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. That's the most important thing. If you get a whole bunch of people out there to buy your book, you think, oh, wow, I went to this con, only 150 people at the con, and 30 of them, right, 20% bought my book. But if 18 of those 30 hate your book, meaning it wasn't to their taste, and they tell everybody, oh, yeah, I tried that guy, and he wasn't very good, you've done more harm than good. You don't want to twist arms indiscriminately. You want to, the first question you should ask, and you should ask a question, not make a statement. Most first authors, their statement is, will you buy my book? You're asking them a question that's trying to get them to give up money. So what do you like? So if they say, and they name authors that you like, that are like you, then you speak up and say, I got something like that. And if they say, I'm all about light comic fantasy, and that's not what you write, you write heavy, angst-filled, deep philosophical fantasy, don't pretend, right? Tell them the truth. Oh, this one's not for you. Because you do more harm than good. You don't want to get every sale. You want to get every sale that's going to be appreciative of the product.
So in a sense, you're saying that it's not the sale that always matters.
That's right, absolutely. Because you're talking about a career. You're talking about, yeah, you can look at the end of the con and say, okay, I sold 20 or 30 books. But if you've got those people are out there and they're saying, it was boring, it was uninteresting, it was full of math, it was full of whatever, you know, doesn't do you any good at all. Better to get five people out there who are telling everybody that they love the book than those five lost amongst 15 others who are saying it wasn't any good. You got to find the appreciative audience for your book, and that's who you push to. Got to target the reader. And if the reader isn't the right reader for your book, then no animosity. Just say, fine, have a good day. This one isn't for you. I don't need that. Few cents of royalties so badly that I'm going to make you give up your beer money on this.
Now, a lot of people would wonder, well, that's Rob Sawyer at the beginning of his career. Now we're talking about Rob Sawyer now. We're talking about Rob Sawyer where Warner is probably bouncing their heads against the desk going, what were we thinking? What were we thinking? What were we thinking?
I'd like to imagine that they are. Yes, yes.
But we're talking about Rob Sawyer now.
Yeah.
We're talking about Rob Sawyer, Hugo winning, Nebula winning. You're going to hear a lot of people say, well, he's Rob Sawyer. He doesn't have to market his books now. Is that true?
No, it never ceases to be true that you have to market your books. You always have to market them in a way that's
not...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You always have to market them.
Right.
You always have to market them, but in a way that isn't irritating. There are writers in this industry who are pariahs. When people see them coming, they turn around and walk the other way.
I'm not one of those people, am I?
You're not one of those people. You're not one of those people.
Thank God.
Okay. But I'll tell you, I got a friend who is a writer who used to think it was his job to go into every bookstore in the town he lived in and turn all of his books face out. And he finally got confronted by a manager in one of the stores. He said, you muck up my display one more time, and I will never carry your books again, right?
This is what we call on the show the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment. That's where you say to someone what the...
Wait, I don't know what that stands for. Let's see that whiskey. Okay. WTF, I got it. I'm with you. I'm here, T. All right. I'm on the page.
Right. But you are saying that there are people and there are authors who tend to go overboard.
Right.
And there is a line that you can cross.
That's right. There's absolutely a line that you can cross. And if people think that you're... See, I don't want to seem mercenary at all. I go to science fiction conventions. Number one reason, I have a good time. And if you don't bother doing it. Because
right.
people will be able to tell you're not having a good time.
Sure.
Number two reason is I think that by osmosis, I will make sales. That is, people will see me on a panel and hopefully think I have something interesting to say. They'll chat with me in the dealer's room or the con suite or just somewhere in the corridor and hopefully think that I'm a fun, polite, nice guy, friendly, approachable, and all that. And at some point, they're going to walk into the dealer's room and say, oh, I was talking to that guy. I want to pick up his book. The guy who's in trouble is the guy who says, here, let me take you and let me walk you over here. Here's the guy who's got my book. Or even worse, here, buy my book right now. If they think the only reason you're talking to them is to make the sale, you've lost the sale, in essence. Even if you do make the sale, it's going to be a negative. Oh, yeah, some guy forced me to buy this piece of crap. You don't want people walking around saying that.
And we're going to take a quick break from this interview with Robert J. Sawyer. What do you think so far, troops? 30 minutes inside of the head of a Hugo and Nebula winner, huh? And I told you, he's a great guy, and I really want to take this time out to say thank you, Rob. You were a scholar and a gentleman, and apart from the people I'm podcasting to, I won't let anyone else know. So, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy, the Christmas special, with your host T. Morris and special guest Robert J. Sawyer. We'll be back in a minute.
There's something awkward about writing a promo for a show. Doing the show, no problem. Write an essay, sit down, talk for a bit about what's on my mind, what's new in geekdom, throw out a game review or two, and then read the essay, which of course focuses on a geek topic. NPR wouldn't run it because they're too good. Not that I'm bitter. But the promo, that's the tricky thing. See, that's the time when you have to say, hey, listen to my podcast that's about half an hour long, has me talking geek to you, and ends with an essay that's also about geeky stuff. It's called Geek Foo Action Grip. People seem to like it, it's been around for several months, and there's no sign of it stopping. It's in the Podcast Pickle Hall of Fame and a proud member of the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. You can find it at www.geekfooactiongrip.com. And I don't know how to just come out and say that. I'll let you know if I come up with something.
Now you should listen to this, because this concerns you.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from the Evil Genius Chronicles.
Shenanigans will ensue.
It's a show where we play indie music from groups who won't sue your nuts off for spreading their name.
I'm ready to rock right now, are you kidding me?
It's a show about voices, mine, yours, and everyone's. I talk about what's on my mind, I converse with musicians, filmmakers, ordinary citizens, and ne'er-do-wells of all stripes. Check out evilgeniuschronicles.org for more information and to subscribe.
We did what you told us. We stuck it to the man.
If you give me the gift of a little of your time, I promise to try to entertain, enlighten, and maybe even baffle you. Evil Genius Chronicles. Thanks.
not your excuse. Sir, excuse for what, sir?
I'm asking the f***ing questions here, Private. Do you understand?
Sir, yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Can I be in charge for a while?
Sir, yes, sir.
And we are back with the second half of the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. I'm your host, T. Morris, and this is your Christmas present, 30 Minutes Inside the Head of Robert J. Sawyer. This is an interview recorded at Astronomicon 2005, held in Rochester, New York. It's in Rob Sawyer's backyard, so he decided to hop across the border and hang out with us Americans, and it was a lot of fun. We had a really good weekend, and I sold a book to Rob Sawyer. I was very proud of that. Granted, it was Podcasting for Dummies, not my fiction, but it's a start. It's a start. So let's return to 30 Minutes with Rob Sawyer.
Where do you draw the line between it's time for me to market my book versus, okay, I don't need to market my book at this point. I can just go on ahead and just be Rob Sawyer.
I don't do a lot of direct marketing of my books anymore, but in the sense of pushing my book in any way, shape, or form. Just being Rob Sawyer, or here at the convention, Matt, right now, Spider Robinson is here. You don't see Spider hustling his books. You see Spider being Spider. And those who are intrigued by what Spider has to say will buy one of Spider's books without Spider having to connect the dots. People are bright. They understand that an author has a product. But you don't have to be the one who take them by the hand and say, and here's my product right now, open up your wallet, please. There's an almost a desperate quality about that. Now, it's different if you've got a table in the dealer's room, or it's the autographing session, or at some point where you're supposed to be. At the beginning of a panel, you're always asked to introduce yourself. That's where you make your plug. I've written a hard SF novel, and it's about uploaded human consciousness. It's called Mind Scan. That's my plug. Anybody, okay, interesting to me. Or half the audience, oh, what a snoozer, I don't care about that. Let them figure out whether it's the right book for them or not.
Now let's talk a little bit about that. How do you market your books in that respect? How do you market the books in saying, okay, this is what I have to offer?
Okay.
And the reason why
first thing is, yeah. Right, first thing, if you're going to a convention and you're a pro, you get asked to be on panels. Sit and take some serious time considering what the panel topics are that are being offered. What you're looking for are the panel topics where the people in the audience are most likely to be the ones who will like your book. So, for instance, I happen to actually quite love classic Star Trek. I will never do a Star Trek panel. Waste of my time. Because the people who come to the Star Trek panel aren't interested in buying Rob Sawyer. They're interested in buying Peter David, the next Star Trek book, right? No point in me doing that panel, even though I would enjoy it. Somebody's doing a panel on, there was one today on the definition of what it is to be human. Interesting panel topic. I've just written a novel about uploaded human consciousness. That's one of the core issues. You pick the ones where the people who self-select to be in the audience are most likely to be the ones who are going to be interested in your book. And then a lot of authors will make a mistake there. They'll say, oh, well, I love Firefly. I love Buffy. Oh, I used to read Cliff Simak all the time. I want to be in this panel. No. Look at the panels that are going to have an audience who's going to be predisposed to like the kind of thing you write, and then just put on the best performance you can for those people. Now, there are a couple of other things you got to do. Whenever you go to a con, make sure you have what they call in the industry car stock, copies of your book with you. You may not be selling them yourselves. In fact, I have a rule. I will not sell anybody a copy of my books directly if there's a dealer in the dealer's room who has it. Here's the reason why. Yes, right now, if I sell it directly, I can get 40% of the profit right into my pockets, whereas if the dealer sells it, I get 10%, get my royalty on a hardcover. But that dealer is going to be going around to a whole bunch of other conventions, and I want him to think that I'm on his side, that I'm part of his team. He goes to another convention in another city next week, and I'm not there, but he remembers, oh yeah, that Sawyer guy, he was there selling out of his backpack. You know, why should I bother lugging his books all over Hell and Creation? So I never undercut a dealer, always support the dealer, but I always have stock with me. If I walk in, I look around, and I say, okay, this guy's a new book dealer, that guy's a new book dealer, where's my new book? They don't have it. Walk up to them and say, hi, my name's Rob Sawyer. I'm on the programming here. I see maybe you didn't get any in time or whatever it is. I'll give you the same discount your distributor gives you, which is usually 40% off or something, and any unsold copies, I'll pick them up at the end of the con. Would you mind carrying my book?
Now, that's Rob Sawyer now. What about Rob Sawyer?
Even then, I would never undercut a dealer. I understood right off the bat the importance of the dealer network. You know, yeah, I could walk out, okay, at the end of a convention, a good convention sales for an author would be to sell, you know, a dozen hardcovers. That's a lot of books. That's the $25 hardcover, so you're talking about moving, you know, something like $300 worth of books. That's a good number of books moving out of the dealer's room. Sure, if I'd sold them myself, $150 or so of that would be my money, whereas if a dealer sells them, it's only $30 of that is my money. But the dealer says, oh, Rob Sawyer sells. He goes to another con I'm not at, but remembers to stalk Rob Sawyer because Rob Sawyer sells. He's seen it with his own eyes. You've got to support your dealer network.
The other thing about authors and the way they interact with each other, you were talking earlier about pariahs.
Mm-hmm.
What about the authors that you meet where you ask them, oh, how are you doing? And the author tells you right off the bat, well, I just had this book released and I just had this book released. Now, you obviously want to tell authors about your other
yeah.
authors about your new works, but again, when do you tell them about that? I mean, do you basically say, well, you know, I've been really busy, I've been working on a new book, or do you bother really pimping your work to other authors?
No, authors never buy other authors' books. That's the bottom line.
Hey, no, wait a minute, I just shoveled it.
And no, I bought one of your books, too. That's exactly it, and you bought one of mine. But in general, you have to remember that every other author at the con is there with their own agenda, which is to sell their books. And that's the way it should be. We're all there to sell our own books. I remember, and I've still got it, I sometimes wear it at home, but I never wear it at cons, another author gave me a t-shirt promoting his book. And I thought, you know, yeah, I'm actually going to promote my own book. Thanks. Nice shirt, and I'll use it, you know, when I'm got to paint the house or something. You know, because what kind of narrow worldview do you have when you can't recognize that the other author has his own product to sell and that his job is not to sell your product? But authors love to gossip. That's half the reason to go to a con. You go to a con because it's a lonely profession, and there's only so much truth to be gleaned from what the little reports are that you might see in Locus or online somewhere. You want to know what's going on, how the industry is really doing, how other authors are doing, who's being dumped, where editors are moving, which editor is a prick, which editor is an angel. You find that out chatting with other authors. So sure, you say, what are you up to? So, oh, we got the sequel to Moravi is about to come out, and I'm very excited about that, and I got Podcasting for Dummies, wrote it with Evo Terrace. I listened to all this stuff when you say it. Good, all right. 30 seconds. That's what we need. It's like the introduction at the beginning of a panel, and then talking about something meaty.
Like. Oh, and I also became a dad last
year. Yeah, that's
something
right.
Like that. You know,
and
be yourself.
Author, yeah, now, how do you make that work as an author, right? Isn't the guy, you know, a little guy always bugging you when you're trying to write? How do you balance that? Is it changing your priorities? Do you think now, wow, am I crazy for being a writer when I've got financial responsibilities? These are things other writers want to talk about. They're curious. They want to know where you are. But they also, you know, they're here to talk about the process and business of being a writer. But sure, you give a little plug. But remember that this is your chance to talk to your colleagues, and you got to be careful too. You're not there to one up your colleagues. So, oh yeah, I got a 3-book contract. I got a 4-book contract. I got a 5-book contract with escalators and a film option. I got a 6-book. You know, fuck off.
Well, then in closing, I mean, you've given some incredible advice here, stuff that I've mentioned on the show, stuff that hasn't been mentioned on the show, and you're giving it a great perspective because you're essentially saying that even when you have a Hugo and you have a Nebula and you have other really cool-looking awards that are great paperweights on your desk, at the same time, you still haven't. You haven't stepped away from the Rob Sawyer of that first
That's
book.
Right. In fact, I'll tell you something. I've been with Tor Books now, which is the largest science fiction publisher in the world. So they acquired me in 1996. They acquired me just before I won the Nebula in 1996. So 9 years, been with David Hartwell at Tor. I've been there 9 years. David Hartwell has been there 9 years, long before that, too. And we've done, I forget, 8 or 9 books together now. I have had a different publicist at Tor for every single book. It's like they belong to the Publicist of the Month Club, I like to say. And it's not just Tor. It's endemic throughout publishing. Publicist is one of the lowest-paying positions. It's an entry-level position in the book business. And so people don't stay very long. So you either are going to say, okay, as your career goes along, somebody fresh out of college who's being paid, you know, not even a living wage is going to have the fate of your book in his or her hands, and they're going to be gone in 6 months anyways. Never read one of your books before, aren't going to know your career, or you're going to take control of it. Who's got the bigger vested interest? I happen to really like, and I'm still pals with, a number of my previous publicists, but the fact of the matter is they're in and out for one book, and then they've gone on to another company that pays better or another position that pays better in publishing. You're the only person who understands your career and who your readers are. And so you've got to be the captain of that ship. You've got to say, no, I know how to push this book. I know who this book is going to appeal to. You're wasting your time with those people over there, but these guys over here, you might not even have thought of these guys over here, but they're going to love this book. And some of it, your publisher will also say, my publicist at Tor was responsible for dozens of books each year. Now, if you're responsible for four dozen books a year, you can spend a week promoting each of those books. 1 week, 5 business days, that's it. That's all that they've got to bring to bear on one of your books, and you're lucky to get 5 days of work out of a publicist. You can bring a day a week or a day a month. Even if you only bring a day a month to you promoting your books, you're bringing 12 days a year, 2.5 weeks, versus that 1 week that your publisher is providing in terms of promoting your book. It's all up to you. In the long run, it really is all up to the author, because only the author is out of work if the author's books fails. The other guys, they've got all this other stuff to worry about. The editor's got other authors. All right, this one didn't work. I got 50 other authors, editor, 25 other authors. Publicist says, well, that one didn't succeed, but look at, we hit the New York Times list with this other book, so we don't even mention the ones that don't succeed. You're the only guy who stands to lose if your book fails.
I was going to say, let's continue on that thought and say, do you have any more advice you'd like to give in the ways of marketing your book? But you've already done that.
Well, let's say a couple things. Okay.
No surprise there.
You got to have an online presence, especially in science fiction. Maybe not. I know this is a fantasy podcast here.
But actually, I have listeners who do chick lit.
Uniquely to science fiction, it is an incredibly technophilic, loving of technology readership. They're the early adopters, the first people not just to have iPods, they're the first people to have MP3 encoders of any type. They're the first people to have personal computers. They're the first people to have portable digital assistants. They love technology. One, you have to have an online presence, an electronic presence. Two, in science fiction and in some other categories, specialty bookstores are hugely important. In my field, science fiction, there are two kinds of bestsellers in our field. There's the Locust bestseller list people and the New York Times bestsellers list people. The people who are on the New York Times bestsellers list, almost without exception in science fiction, did it because they wrote a media tie-in. You wrote a Star Wars or a Star Trek and you got on the New York Times list. Your own books don't sell anything at all, but you can put on the book the rest of your life, New York Times bestseller. The other bestsellers list is the Locust list, and the Locust list is made from data gathered from specialty science fiction bookstores. When I had Mindscan, I've hit number one on the Locust list, Mindscan and Heart for Calculating God and Mass Market Paperback. Mindscan and Hardcover was number four, which is very high on their list. I went to most of the stores that contribute to that list, or many of the stores that contribute to that list, and arranged to do signings in the month the book came out. You can actually become a bestseller in this industry by selling to the dozen key stores, really well in those key stores. And after that, you're a best-selling author forever. You'll always be called that, best-selling author, until you're dead. So you gotta support and do work with the specialty bookstores. You've got to be online, and the combination of those two things are often forgotten by writers who think, okay, I'm going to do a signing at Walden Books. And Walden Books is an important store, there's no doubt about that, but Walden Books is not going to sell you 20 books in an evening, and a specialty store might sell you 20 books in an evening.
And the last question that we're going to end on, Robert J. Sawyer, award-winning, best-selling novelist, when are we going to get the RJS podcast?
I just bought today the book, The Dummy Podcasting for Dummies by some guy. It's a golfing term. Is it?
You can hear
Caddy.
Coming. Yeah, you can hear him coming a mile away.
T. Morris and Evo Terra's Podcasting for Dummies. As soon as I finish my current novel, which is at the end of the month, I'm breaking into that book, and I got my iRiver MP3 encoder here, and I'm going to be setting something up.
But you haven't really given any thought on what you might want to do, or do you know what
angle
you want to
do? Actually, you know, I've taken an idea from this golfing guy again, T. Morris, because he had
I don't want to compete against Robert.
He had the first book that was podcast. I think I'm going to start putting up chapters of my upcoming novel, do a chapter a month as a reading and see how that goes.
From different books, not the same book.
No, sequentially.
Oh.
I got the novel is about 36 chapters long. I'll do a chapter a month for, because I don't want to give away the whole thing on the audiobook.
Right.
But I'll get people a third of the way into the book by reading it to them, and then when the book is out, say the book is out. You know, if you want to find out how the story ends, just came out this month, Rollback from Tor Books. Then it will come out December of next year.
Rob, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for providing a great Christmas present to all of my listeners.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is why I do the podcast. This is why I think we get along so well together.
For sure, we're
and,
buddies.
Yeah, and I really appreciate it. Rob Sawyer, thanks for coming on.
D. Morris, my pleasure. Thank you.
And there you go. Merry Christmas, everybody. Not only did I give you 30 minutes with Robert J. Sawyer, you also got to hear Robert J. Sawyer drop the F-bomb. And only on The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. And this is a great way to just wish you all a Merry Christmas and also thank you for listening. I'm only a few months old, but it has been a real treat getting your emails, answering your blogs, and also doing a little research, doing a little soul searching, and finding out some of the stuff that I've been going through since 2002. And if you don't celebrate Christmas, well, just take it in the spirit that it's given. You know, I mean, I grew up in an age where if I said Merry Christmas to somebody who's Jewish, they would say back to me, well, Happy Hanukkah. And to me, that's what it's all about. It's the spirit in what the wish is given, you know? I just hope you all enjoyed this as much as I did putting it together for you. I'm T. Morris, and this is The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. You've written the novel, you've signed the contract, and now the book is in your hand. The only direction to go from here is up.
Oh, that's right, Private Pyle. Don't make any f***ing effort to get up to the top of the f***ing obstacle. If God wanted you up there, he would have miracled your ass up there by now, wouldn't he?
Say yes, sir!